towards the darkness.
Nah, yo, look towards the light.
Yo, what is that?
It's a supernova.
Nah, man, that's a black hole.
Yo, it's
I leap over lies.
Hey, y'all. Man, that was an oldie. He's aging us.
They're
gonna start figuring out our age soon here. Okay.
They're gonna figure out your age.
Welcome
I'm
back.
I'm a youngin'.
Always a youngin'. Welcome back to another episode of the Bed Talks podcast. We are excited to have another guest with us tonight. He is going to be talking about a topic that some people run from, pun intended. And we're excited to have him here to give us a little more insight. I know I captured your curiosity. You might stick around now. His name is Coach Court Gatlin, and he focuses on attachment styles. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So why don't you tell a little bit about yourself and some of the work that you do to help clients?
Okay.
Help your clients.
It started off as a life and relationship coaching business, but I had to funnel it down to more relationships and more specifically attachment styles and how it shows up in relationships. So how you attach to your romantic partner is how you were essentially raised, you know, from age 0 to 7. It pretty much set the foundation of how you were going to show up later on in life. And as I was going through coaching school and I reflect on my life and some of the things I was doing, some of the mistakes I was making, it made a whole lot of sense, you know. And I think about how a lot of guys that show up real clingy and needy in relationships, you know, I'm telling my age, you know, I'm 40, I just turned 40. And I think about the things that was subconsciously programming me when I was growing up, like the boys to men, like the jealousy, the people who were begging for women and just basically.
And that was you. Hold on. So was that you? That you?
Well, yeah, to a degree. Yeah, for sure. So in a realm of attachment styles, I would say I have that abandonment wound, you know. I fear women leaving. I did. I'm more secure now, you know, because I did a lot of studying, a lot of work on myself. But yeah, that was me.
You know, it is funny. Someone had posted videos about all these bad things that music was teaching us in the 90s and the early 2000s. And they're like, beg for that love. Don't leave. Don't ever go.
Yep.
They're like, mm-hmm. It was sending us so many mixed and unhealthy relationship messages. But anyway, tell us a little bit about like how you got to the point where you actually were able to see or recognize you had an issue. Because I think the hardest part a lot of times is when people have these issues, we are so close to ourselves that it's hard to really have self-awareness around like why we operate a certain way until things keep happening over and over, or we just hit the wall and then we're like, wait a minute, I don't want to keep going through this. But it takes a lot for people to get there. So what kind of opened your eyes to see that you might have some of these challenges in your relationships personally?
Well, when I was in it, I thought it was functional. You know, I thought this like, is just how you're supposed to show up in relationships. You know, a happy wife, happy life. You know, whatever she wants, she gets. But also, I have to remember that now I know just how unhealthy that was. And it took a divorce, pretty much. Mm. I was married 9 years, was with her for 15 years. And in the end, I came so unglued. You know, I was a business owner. I was someone that was doing well. I just made the newspaper, all these other things. But then I just came unraveled when she was like, I don't want this anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started to go down a rabbit hole, look through my little paper. I'm like, wait a minute, this seems like this is something right here that I've actually already experienced before. And that's when I discovered attachment styles again and learned about it in coaching school when I was getting my certification. And as I was looking for it, there was not a whole lot of information out there about it, at least putting it into a layman's terms. You know, they had a lot of therapists and clinicians that were explaining it. But I'm like, how about you just dumb it down for me a little bit so I know exactly what it is I have? And that's essentially what it was. I felt like I was becoming a coach that I wish I would have found when I was trying to learn about this.
I got to throw something at you, man, because, you know, I think everyone has suffered some level of heartbreak, pain, loss, so forth. But I'm going to pose this a two-part question, okay? And I want you to really think on this, all right? you went through a lot. You said you guys were married for 9 years. You were together for 15. That's devastating. I don't know your whole story. I don't have to know your whole story. I know when you with someone for that amount of time, period, there's going to be some severe pain, some severe anxieties, hurt, depression, all those things. Okay. But I got to ask you, so how did that set you back? I want you to hear me. How did it set you back? And or how did it set you up going through that? Because one thing I've learned in life, yes, there are times that things will set us back. But in the process, those things also set us up. And I'm speaking from experiences myself. I got to pose that question to you, man.
I love it because this is what I actually coach. When people come through my Zoom lens, I'm thinking, how can I help you transmute this into something that's going to benefit you? So how it set me back was when I said I became unraveled, you know, couldn't eat, couldn't sleep, couldn't work, lost my job, lost my house, 50% custody of my kids, lost my dog, car got repoed, all of that just completely fell apart. How it set me up was I got given a reset in my life and I was able to really dig deep in my personal development. And once I learned so much about relationships, about, you know, positive mindset and you know, essentially knowing that you are your own creator of your own destiny, I said, how can I use this information now? You know, there's not another, I don't need to listen to another podcast or study another coach anymore. I'm like content overload right now. So how can I use this? And that's when I said, I think I'm going to start coaching. And when I'm in the middle of it, they're like, wait a minute. My friend's like, bro, you going through a divorce. How you going to coach? I'm like, watch me. I know what I know. Because my job before that, I was already into this type of field. I was a life coach for average youth, AKA a mentor. And I had been doing that for 15 years, you know, and working with people that came from every different type of, you know, I don't know if we want to call it dysfunctional, but tough upbringings. You know, so I had to be an advocate for them and help them navigate out. So I'm like, now it's time for me to mentor this little Courtney and me and navigate him out of it, you know, grow him up.
And I'm sure as you were advocating for these individuals, man, truth be told, it was slowly but surely becoming your therapy also. It was becoming your healing also, you know. I don't think you can, you know, relate to anybody or try to assist, help, coach anybody unless you've been through some of those traumatic experiences yourself. And people can pick up on it. It's like if you talk to
1,000%.
Me. Yeah, right. And 1,000%. That's why I could feel you when you started talking, you know, because, yeah, you know, the term sometimes hurt people know other hurt people, but strong people also know other strong people, heal people, so forth and so on.
Yeah. It's a vibrational thing. You pick up on the same frequencies, you know, and I've been doing this for so long. I can pick up on a lot of things pretty quickly. I can pick up on narcissism, all type of stuff. Like, okay. But it is really reassuring, though, when you do meet people that's on the same vibration, because there's like this sense of familiarity, you know, like it's a connection that you don't have with other people. And it's pretty rare. And I've coached a good amount of people now. But the people that I keep around, like I reach out in emails, I'm like, man, how you been? You doing all right? I hope everything improved with your situation. Just because those people, you know, you can just tell the pain kind of bonds you. And when I was going through school, it talked a lot about assimilation. And when kids would come to my city and get placed here, for some reason, they'd be able to find other kids that are, you know, troubled you too within a week. I'm like, how in the world? You came to town fresh, you know, spanking new. And you just connected with all the people around you just because they assimilated with them. They knew exactly what felt familiar and comfortable. And just one Facebook ad and one Instagram ad, and it was a wrap. They knew each other and they're hanging out. Like, all right, just so you know, you're not going to be hanging around too much. So, you know, just being a big brother type.
Yeah. So. Can you like take us back a little bit? So that's interesting. You had a background of helping kids. And then almost I feel like this was you tapped into your inner child, right? Of some of the things that you dealt with. Because I do believe the work, when you're very passionate about it, there has to be a connection. And that is what people do tap into. Just like Kay said, we always use the example of someone has like a drug issue or something like that. I may know theoretically the things they should do, but if I haven't had that experience with drug addiction personally, it will be very hard for me to tap into some of the things that they're battling day to day as they go through that recovery. And so that's why they often connect and have a sponsor of someone who's been through that journey. So I just want to connect the audience because I know different people have heard different things about attachment styles. Can you walk people through the four different types of attachment styles? And actually, I heard there's another one too. I'm curious to see if you're aware of it.
Really?
So, yeah.
So the book I like that puts it in layman terms, like I talked about, or dumbing it down, is a book by Stan Tatkin. It's called Wired for Love. Mm-hmm. And he broke it down into three different attachments.
Okay.
And he made it, he kind of made an analogy out of it. You have the anchor, which is the secure person. You have the island, which is the dismissive avoidant. And then you have the wave, which is a combination of the anxious preoccupied and the fearful avoidant.
Oh, that to me is easier than when they break it out even more in detail. Yeah.
So you can ask, like, are you an anchor or are you a wave? You know, because it makes more sense. But I guess the difference between the anxious preoccupied and the fearful avoidant is the anxious preoccupied is just I'll give a little bit of background. Anxious preoccupied are people who their core wounds are fear of abandonment, fear of rejection. So that's like the technical term for when you say someone's a stage five clinger. They're probably an anxious preoccupied person because they fear that abandonment, and the love that they had coming up was inconsistent, which is why they ended up the way they were. You know, their primary caregiver may have given them a lot of intense love, but it was inconsistent. One minute they're strong and affectionate, next minute they're not. And usually I've seen that with people who came up in households where parents may have struggled with undiagnosed mental health. You know, they may have been a bipolar or something themselves, so they don't really know exactly if they're going to be there and present. And now the dismissive avoidant is the person that usually suffer from some form of neglect coming up, which means parent wasn't around mentally or emotionally or physically. You'll see that more with people who parents was deployed overseas or something, or a parent that worked a lot, or they were a latchkey, I think that's the name of it, right?
Latchkey kid.
Yeah, where they were always around. And they also had to be the person to be the caregiver for younger siblings, you know, where they were the big brother that always, you know, did the bedtime routine, changed the diapers, fed, and all those different things. And they had to grow up quicker than they wanted to. And I see this a lot where I came from St. Louis, where, you know, you have a single mom that's working a lot, and then you have the bigger spouse, the older spouse, having to always babysit and be the one to take care of the younger sibling. They end up being a lot more emotionally unavailable because they didn't have people there to take care of their emotions and their needs. So that's the dismissive person. And the secure person, which is the fearful avoidant is the rare one. Secure, there's not a lot of secure people. I think they said it's probably like 30% of people in general that are secure, which means they came from a background that was stable. You know, this was the people who showed up for all the games, parents showed up for all the games, dad and mom married for a while, or either mom and dad got divorced and another caregiver came in and still was that consistent, stable person around and set a good example, or was a stability, was a pillar for that relationship. This is why it's so rare, because there's so many broken households these days that who knows who's going to show up. And, you know, being a single mom or a single dad is hard. So you may not have that balance of that. I'm a huge fan of the mask and then feminine energy too. I think it's very important to have healthy mask and healthy feminine energy around the house. But I digress on that. So the last one is the fearful avoidant. I like fearful avoidance. They are one of the rarest. They're the wild cards. And I think they're the ones that just, they're the fun ones. Okay, let me explain them.
Yeah, right? Give an example. Give a scenario.
Man.
Because you said they're the scenario. Wild cards. Like, immediately my mind's like, what do you mean by that? And then you're like,
So wild cards meaning you don't know how they're going to show up. They show up hot and cold. They show up, they may be extremely intense, loving, overbearing, whatever, anxious. They can look anxious, but then they have this dismissive part of them where they'll just ghost on you and they'll just be gone. And it almost comes off as kind of bipolar-ish or, bipolar, where you don't know which person you're going to get that day. Mm. And what I learned about them, though, is they're the ones that came from this. Now, this isn't 100% because everyone's different. But from everyone I've worked with, they came from backgrounds that were very tumultuous and they had complex trauma, different levels of trauma. You know, when I was working with kids, you know, the kids that tended to be fearful of avoidance, they came from abusive backgrounds where a parent was, you ever heard of ACEs, adverse childhood experiences? Mm-hmm. So there's a test you can take and it's a pretty simple test. It's 10 questions. And it's the bearer test. It's like 10 questions. They have more intense, more deep in depth tests now for adverse childhood experiences. But as far as like the base entry level ACEs, it's 10 questions that go around neglect, abuse, and other different mental health issues or things you may have experienced. The higher your ACE score, the more likely you are to show up as an at-risk youth. Or it actually connected you to higher likelihood at being 40 and getting diabetes, cardiovascular disease, a whole bunch of different.
Because the trauma sits physical, in the body.
Yeah,
because yeah, the physical. Effect.
Because the fight or flight is activated
right, all the time. Yeah, I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So when you see fearful avoidance show up in relationships, this is how they view them, or how John Bowlby, he's the guy that created it. Or theorized at first, they have a low opinion of themselves and they have a low opinion of other people. So they're confused about who to trust. They don't know to trust you. They don't know to trust their own
instinct,
compass.
Of, right.
Yeah, yeah, they don't know to trust that. So, and that's, I guess that's the easy way to put it too. So the dismissive avoidant over time, they have a low opinion of you and a high opinion of themselves that makes them more independent and makes them not want to get into some type of serious committed relationship. The anxious, preoccupied person has a low opinion of themselves and have a high opinion of you, which is why they
cling on to
abandonment so much.
Right, but they cling on to that person, right? Because they put their value on this other person.
They see them as a prize and themselves not so much.
That makes sense to me because the fearful avoidant, it doesn't want to be compromised because trust has been broken so many times. Mm. So it's like, I'd rather take that power in moments and love you when I want to, but then I'm going to pull back if I feel fear because that's a normal reaction if that's what's the behavior that's been introduced to you over your lifetime, right? Yeah.
Now, that is such the hard. So black is black and white for me with anxious, preoccupied, and dismissive avoidance. I can solve that all day in my sleep. Mm-hmm. But the fearful avoidant is the hard one because they are often the ones that show up more like narcissists, where you don't know if what they're saying is true or if they're really into you, if they're dating multiple people. They'll go away, then come back. Mm-hmm. For the dismissive person, it's pretty obvious. They're not dealing with anyone else. They just need their space and their time at the moment. But the fearful are the ones that are just hard to get a hold on. Like, I try to get a grasp. So whenever someone comes to say, hey, I think this person might be a fearful avoidant, I would have to ask a lot of questions to see exactly if this person's not necessarily bipolar, BPD, narcissistic, anything like that. And I don't diagnose, but I've seen this so many times that if I see a certain amount of patterns heading a certain direction, I try to, you know, help them protect their heart as quickly as possible.
So the bottom line is, like, if only 30% of people are coming from secure environments, that's a small percentage. 70% are not. And I often feel like, I know we talk about the attachments.
I think they...
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say... I think
they said anxious and avoidant make up about 50% of relationships.
So anxious and avoidant are 50%? Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. So, okay, so if anxious and avoidant is 50%, secure is 30%, and then the wild card, which you say is the fearful avoidant, is that other percentage.
Yeah.
Like, if you're in a relationship with one of these personalities, at what point do you continue to work through it? And at what point do you feel like you may have to create space and walk away from it? Because I think that's the gray we don't always talk about. Yeah. Like, I do believe all relationships take work. because we're imperfect people and you're coming together and there's that melding and there's going to be the power dynamics and there's going to be you trying to like bring your way of doing things. I'm pushing okay because he knows. We both have done this, been through that.
I'm used to it.
Yeah. Oh, ha, ha, ha. But at the same time, is some of that friction, I say there's healthy friction because sometimes that friction is needed to move your relationship to the next level. Mm-hmm. And I think people are very uncomfortable with friction because you have all of these personality characteristics coming in when people feel friction or discomfort. But how do you know when the friction is okay and dealable and solvable? And from your perspective as a coach, when do you say, okay, you know what, you may need to step away from this personality because it's just not, it's not working? So where do you draw the line? It's a loaded
one
question.
Thing I like, one thing I like about Steve Harvey, what he had right, is like, he talked a different way about the 90-day rule. I think the 90-day rule is the perfect amount of time to see who a person really is. And you had enough time to ask the questions and to see the characteristics and some, a little bit of their quirks, if they have quirks. I feel like 90 days is a time where you should just not even talk about a commitment at that point.
Just assess. Mm-hmm.
You should just try to see who each other are. Mm-hmm. But the honeymoon stage can last a year.
Up to two years, right.
Year and a half. Yeah, year and a half, you start to really hit that power struggle stage. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, at this time, you're already attached. So if you can, the earlier the better, you know, once you start to see the glitch in the matrix, you have a choice to make, you know?
I like that, the glitch in the matrix. Yeah, that's actually, the glitch in the relationship matrix.
Yeah, for sure.
That
yeah.
black cat keeps coming through. You're like, okay, yeah. I may need to rethink this.
And let me say this to the regular folks in our audience, the layman's per se. You guys have used a lot of terminologies with these attachment styles. Let me just, I'm going to be the layman of the group, okay?
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, please understand, you don't have to know these attachment styles to see certain patterns that may be detriment for you to do an about face or a detour. The reason I say that is because before I learned some of these attachment styles, there were certain styles I had already seen in a person in their patterns that told me either yay or nay. Now, I'm not saying I always listen to that. I'm not saying I always heeded that, but I just don't want this interview to go over everyone's, oh my goodness, I don't know if they're dismissive, if they're, oh my goodness, careful, what am I going to do? Sweetie, sir, ma'am, boy, girl, whatever. If you see certain things, certain patterns that you know are not suited for you, it may be suited for someone else, okay? If it's not suited for you, follow your instincts. Follow your common sense, because you may not know these terms. And just because you don't know the meaning of these terms doesn't mean you won't know the meaning of some patterns that you see. So I had to throw that in there. And Courtney, I got to throw this at you, man. Now, I don't want to touch any heartstrings, but which one do you think your ex was based on these attachment styles?
I'll pass on that question.
Okay. So let me go to you. Let me go
to it. Yeah.
Okay. Let me go to you then. What attachment style do you think you are? If you hadn't already said it.
Yeah. I'm secure, primary, with a secondary, anxious. Which means when conflict arises, I could get triggered into my anxiousness. Which means that abandonment wound gets awakened. I think it's all, me personally, if I had to dumb it down, it's all inner child stuff. Mm-hmm. Unaddressed inner child wounds. And whenever you start to have that moment where you feel like the little Courtney's getting out of hand and he's protesting because he couldn't see his girlfriend on Friday night. That's when you have to do some self-soothing and say, well, we'll just take ourselves to the movie. So we'll make another video. We'll edit. We'll learn edit. We'll take this course that we were thinking about taking and just learning how to self-regulate and self-soothe.
I like what you said. Anxious. I like what you said, though, about how, you know, a lot of our traumas or how we are as adults stem from our childhood, from our, you know, coming through certain experiences as children. T.D. Jakes once said, and I'll never forget this because I think it was one of his men conferences that he was hosting. And he made a reference to the little boy in the cave. And when I tell you, and this was years ago, he touched on so many heartstrings with these grown, robust, masculine men. In such a way that you had numbers of men just, I mean, bawling, shedding tears because he had tapped into that childhood space that no one had ever been able to tap into, okay? for one. For two, that they had already kept in the cave, figuring I don't need to tap into this boy in the cave anymore. And then thirdly, recognizing you were still a part of that boy that was still trapped in the cave. And the way T.D. Jakes broke it down, he literally exposed the root meaning and the root experiences as to why these guys, these men, were dealing with their present situations. They had to go back and fight the little boy in the cave. They had to go back to remove the little child from the cave, deal with those hurts and those pains so they can then truly heal and move on.
100%. That's the root to it all.
Yeah, there's a great show I was watching with Kerry Washington. She plays a therapist. I don't know if you've seen this on Hulu, and it's called Unprisoned. And her dad was in and out of prison her whole life. And he comes out and he's like, look, I'm not going to go back. And every time she's battling thoughts of trusting him and her anxiousness, which is poured into all her adult relationships, the one she has with her son, the one she has with the men she's trying to date, her inner child comes out. So they literally have a little child come out and start like acting out all of the anxiety and the frustration. And it's true. Like, I always feel like things have a root. So I feel like, you know, you could be secure, but then you could be in a relationship where now another, I like that you said that you have a secondary piece that shows up of anxiousness or avoidance, because there's still something we all have either dealt with either in our childhood or adulthood or through trauma happening in your life at a different point in your life that you bring to a relationship.
Yeah, it's so crazy because there's a lot of guys that'll say, Court, I don't know what happened, but this girl is, I was a player before I met her, and all of a sudden, boom, I'm triggered. Like, I only been seeing her for 2 months, and I can't get her out of my mind. I guess because you're attached, because she spoke to that little kid in you. She did something to placate it, and now you can't put it back to bed. I'm glad you mentioned that about Kerry Washington. It made me think about a concert I went to this past year, which was Kendrick Lamar concert. And he talks a lot about the inner child on that album. Like, he just breaks it down completely. He opens up the concert with a singing puppet of himself. And he's playing the piano. And he talks a lot about that. Throughout the whole album, it's just basically his inner child trauma. And he didn't care. He had on the album, Eckhart Tolle was his therapist on the album.
Oh, kind of
skitting with him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, he brought out the puppet. I'm like, man, I'm so glad this is coming mainstream. You know?
I am too, because I you know, we hear a lot of language, and I can say this as I have two men here sitting here talking to me, that we talk a lot about men need respect, men need deference, they need this. And I'm like, the thing we don't talk about is men need love. There's a lot of hurt men out here, just like there's hurt women. And I think because men don't show that emotion, because they protect it and shield it because of whatever has happened, or because society has dictated, hey, go out here, be successful in these ways. And that emotional component is not taught. So you see a lot of men that really stop their development at a certain age. So that's why sometimes you hear people say, I feel like I'm in a relationship with a teenager, because maybe something has happened at that phase of that person's development. And that is where they are indeed stuck. But I do think we don't talk about the piece of like love and how important it is to softening and helping someone to get to that next phase of trust and developing in other areas. But we talk about all the other areas. I mean, they get highly, highly referenced. But we forget the emotional component. And that's why I think these relationships are such a sticking point, because people are just, they're riding different emotional wavelengths, like literally, like the wave. I mean, I love that analogy, how that guy broke it down, because there is, people are feeling these things in their relationships, and they just like, they hit the wall, you know, and they can't figure out how to manage through it. And I guess that's where we come in, wink, wink, but as coaches and so forth. But I think it's important that people talk about these things too, and they give space for it. So when people see Kendrick Lamar talking about it, this hip hop rapper, you know, that's successful, it's like, oh, he got an inner child too? Not knowing that's really why you're relating to his music, probably. There's probably something that touches on something in your heartstring, because music is a great teacher, right? It just, I think, I just love to see that empowerment happening.
And I think the transparency, you know, with the Kendrick Lamar, or anyone for that matter, even with you, Courtney, you know, that's how you're able to build those bridges, you know, to your prospective clients or just people who need an advocate, you know, is that transparency. Yeah. I've always had respect for anyone, and Elizabeth knows this. There have been some great speakers, some great messengers that I've had the pleasure to listen to in person and would actually hear them expose themselves. It may have happened 5 years ago. It may have been 10 years ago. It may even be current, but yet you still see their success in them. I love transparency because you sometimes find yourself in that place. And if you're not careful, you think you're the only one that's dealing with that until someone else comes along and they say the exact same thing. And that taps into, as we were talking about, you know, that inner child.
That's, I think it's why I'm so blessed. This was predestined for me, you know, to take this path. My dad left when I was 3, he went to the military and he did what he had to do. You know, we have a great relationship now, but it still didn't take away the outcome, which is because the little child is so, they live with a very selfish worldview. Like, dad left because of me, you know, and I didn't think, all right, now as I'm older, I'm able to talk to that kid and say, nah, he thought he did what was right, you know. Back then, the only way to get out of that neighborhood was through sports or military. And I can talk to them like that and have a very mature and healthy relationship with them. I forgot where I was going with that. Oh, lost my train of thought.
It's okay. I think that you're connecting the dots to people kind of being introspective, because when we're young, we just don't have a reference point yet. When you're 3 years old, 5 years old, the world is just you, and you're only 5 years old. And I know, even as you know, we're parents, as your kids get older, you're like, why can't they get this? And then I always got to remind myself, they're only here for like 17 years, 20 years, 25 years. They still are growing and learning. And then I got to go back to how were you when you were 20 years old?
I mean, really, it's, you know, I have to be, you know, reminded of me, you know, at that age. And sometimes
that's true. I know, I get it. Now I just helped me jog that memory. Appreciate that. The reason I even went into working with at-risk youth is because I knew what it was like to not have a father figure out or a healthy big brother figure around to figure things out. So my job was to come in and advocate for them, which I love the book, What Happened to You by Bruce Perry and Oprah Winfrey. What happened to you? Instead of asking what's wrong with you, I ask what happened to you. And I can be in the middle ground and advocate for them. So when I first went into this attachment styles deal, I understood the traumas that come from people who are more dismissive. So I would be an advocate and I play the middle ground, you know, be in the middle for both. Anxious people, this is what you have to do in order to show up for the avoidant person. Avoidant person, stop being so stubborn and meet us in the middle here. So that's why I love what I do, because when you can see it click, you know, when I can get on a call and I just see, you know, a couple and I see one person just like, wow, the light bulb went off.
Oh, it's so rewarding. It is to help people on their journey and to like help them connect the dots and to see them grow. Like, that is nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always say this is more the most purposeful work I feel like I've done in my life.
It is. It could be the most mentally taxing.
It's hard too. Yeah. People don't know. Yeah. We'd be like worried about you. Like, I had a client I talked to the other day, and like they were like, one day they couldn't get to the appointment. I didn't know what happened. Like, they didn't come. I'm like, what's going on? And I was talking to my husband. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm worried. And I was like, don't leave me hanging like that. Just let me know. Because we do build an attachment to people and we become vested in them, you know, really getting through the journey and through their challenges.
Yeah. So true.
Yeah, it's been so much fun to talk to you tonight. Mm-hmm. And I think the work you're doing is amazing. Keep up the good work. I love that you invested so much time in young people too, and that you're now carrying it forward and you're helping the young people who probably have become adults.
Young adults. Yeah, I actually went to one of their weddings not too long ago. He's about 27, something, 26, 27.
Okay.
You're old now, man. Wedding. You're old now.
I know.
You old now.
So I guess, did you have a question for him?
No.
Oh, I was going to ask you, so people want to find you, you know, how do they find out more about the work you're doing? And are there any special projects you're working on right now?
None at the moment. I was going to be transitioning to like a relationship, actually helping coaches be relationship coaches. I guess that's kind of my next step here is, I became a coach that I wanted to find when I was looking for someone. So I want to help out in that way too.
Okay.
Cause it's hard to get traction. There's a lot of voices out there. So.
And I'm sorry.
Go
ahead. What? Finish up, Court.
Oh, I was going to say, my YouTube is where my home base is, which is Coach Court. That's my home base. That's where, a lot of my following gets the most attention usually, because it's a community. You know, when you're going through that heartache and it's usually temporary. You know, I'll see them. They'll be riding or die for me with me for 6 months, and then they'll fall off. But other people, they'll come back around, you know, a year later and start talking. And I like having that outlet and still being there, that home base for them, you know.
Would you consider that a digital outlet?
Yeah, to a degree. Okay. Yeah, to a degree. But you actually do have some real meaningful DM conversations, you know, with some people. I don't really coach in person. Since I started this, I probably coached like 3 people in person. It's been mainly online.
Yeah.
But it is a good digital outlet. I have a website, all the major platforms, okay. You know, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok.
And under Coach Court, I'm guessing. Coach Court.
Yeah. So actually, no, my website is Fruitful Seeds.
Okay.
FRUIT, seeds with a Z at the end. Mm-hmm. And why did I start that business? This is a different business. And I just kind of, I work under that umbrella.
Okay.
I think I started that business was because I listened to a book as I was going through my divorce over and over and over and over. And it was James Allen, As a Man Thinketh. Mm. And he talks a lot about, you know, the seeds you sow will be what will manifest, you know, what will grow. Mm-hmm. And I was like, huh, I think I'm gonna start planting fruitful seeds in people's life. Mm-hmm. And I started getting on Facebook Live every day. My friends got real annoyed when my notifications pop up. But then it was a little bit of momentum building up to me. I was like, I like doing this. Mm-hmm. And you got your friend to say, hey man, I'm going through a divorce and you didn't know about it. Like, wow, thanks for your vulnerability. So that was it. So Facebook is Coach Court. Instagram, I am Coach Court. But that's usually the ones I usually use.
Okay. And one more thing before you leave. You added something important. I want to remind people, when you're going through these journeys of figuring it out, you don't have to do it alone. Mm-hmm. You know, you no, talked about the power of the community, that the community is there to support, build you up, help you when you fall down, give you some answers, give you a more holistic picture to know that you're not alone on this journey. So it's super important for people to use resources, just like we do with everything else that we want to gain in life. So thank you so much for being on the show tonight. It was a pleasure. We're going to wrap it up for now. You guys, please remember to subscribe to our podcast. You can do so on Spotify, Anchor, Apple, Google Podcasts, and many other platforms. And we'll be back with more great guests. And thanks again, Coach Court. And go check them out, please, on Instagram or on YouTube as well to get some knowledge around your relationships and your attachment styles. Still bookmarks. Ignorance hates when I drop it, but no matter.